Well, it was not the words that you ever want to hear. It's not the words especially that you want to hear when you're in a foreign country. You see, I stood there in the Dublin airport and the ticketing agent said, "I'm sorry, but your tickets have been canceled." And it was an awful feeling for me and the black women, you know, Brenda Black, Rachel Black, and Lauren Black, as we stood there and watched our 14 other team members with their tickets walk and go away through the security. And there we stood with no way home in Dublin, Ireland. And we had a fantastic mission trip, and we loved what happened, but we wanted to go home. And there it was, the agent, she's pounding on the computer, and then she would go back behind the curtain, and then she would come back and pound on the computer, and we were concerned, and she was confused why our tickets had been canceled, and we stood there with no way home. And I can remember at one point, Lauren, I think, said, "Mom, what are we going to do? How are we going to get home?" And without hesitation, I said, "We are going home today." And the ticketing agent, she was doing everything she could. She was pounding away, and she was, you know, trying to figure it out, and I'm, like, giving her all the different codes of different airports in the U.S. that I know, and I'm just like, "Get me to the United States, and I can get myself home. Like, we can work on this," type thing. And so she was trying her best. At the same time, it was confusing, and it was concerning, and at the same time, she had an Irish accent, so it made everything much wonderful and to hear. And so there we stood with no way home. And I had this sense of feeling that I just wanted to go home. I wanted to be reunited with my family. I wanted to be where I was supposed to be. Ireland's an amazing place, but it's not where I'm from. It's not my home. And so I just wanted to go home. And the truth is that all of us in this room, we've had that feeling at some point, that we just want to go home. It can be a long day at the sports park. It can be in the backyard of our neighbor's house. It can sometimes happen at your in-law's house, and you would never admit that. But you know that you just want to go home, and you just want to be where you want to be. It can happen in traffic on the Sunol grade, and you recognize that you're not where you're supposed to be. And at the same time, there's those other moments in life, those kind of more serious moments that you kind of go, "Is this all there is? Is this all it's supposed to be?" It can come after moments of success. Maybe you get that big sale, or maybe you finally get that promotion, or you get that bonus check, and you go, "I did all that for this? Is there something more? I mean, it doesn't feel like this is the right thing." And then it oftentimes creeps up in our lives during the failures. And we go, "This isn't fair. This isn't right. Is this what I'm working for? Is this what I'm trying to achieve? Is this how it's supposed to be?" And we just don't feel like we're in the right place. And then actually the scariest moments of life are the moments that we don't recognize it. The moments where we kind of are self-sufficient and we're cruising along and everything seems to be okay. And the truth is that check engine light is on in the background, but we just choose to ignore it. And we're not where we are supposed to be. And interestingly enough, in Jesus' time, the people felt the same way. You see, there were basically two different types of crowds back then in Jesus' time. There were the religious folks over here, and they were just constantly trying to obey and follow all the rules and adding more rules on top of other rules because they hadn't heard from God for over 400 years. And so they just said, "You know what? We're just going to keep trying to do good. We're just going to keep obeying. We're just going to keep doing our best." And they just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And then there was the group over here that kind of responded in a different way. They said, "You know what? We haven't heard from God for 400 years. Forget about him. He's clearly forgot about us. So we're just going to live life how we want to live. And it might have we might have consequences in the end, but at least we're going to enjoy it while we're here." And I'm sure there are people in between, but there are these two groups that just they couldn't figure out how to respond to God's silence. And then Jesus comes on the scene and tends to frustrate everyone. Because to the religious folks, he was cutting to the heart and saying, "You know what? It's not what you do, but it's why you do it." And he was trying to have them look at their motivation. And then to the group over here, he's talking to them, he's saying they're absolutely right challenging you in how your lifestyle is, and that you're not living a God-honoring lifestyle. And so he seems to frustrate everyone, and we have these two kind of sides on the scene that's happening at this time. And he challenges them right to the core and the motivation of their why, and everyone is frustrated because they don't understand the real reason why Jesus came. And they have questions of, well, if he's hanging out with those folks over there, can he really be this religious of a man? And yet, if he's talking to us like that and challenging us our lifestyles, is he really who he claims to be? And both sides were equally frustrated. It's probably the one area that they were really united on. And yet, they didn't understand Jesus' mission, Jesus' real purpose in coming. And the truth is that in this room sometimes we get frustrated. We try to do a lot of good things. We serve, we give money and all the things. And sometimes we pause and we go, I'm just frustrated. I don't get it. Why don't they respond this way? Why isn't this happening? And then there's some of us, we may not be honest with people about it, but we've kind of thrown in the towel and we've just said, forget it. I mean, I'll show up, but I'm just going to live life the way I want to live it. And yet, at the same time, we get frustrated because we see this Jesus in the Bible and we don't understand why did he come? What was his purpose? And we don't fully get it. And so I want to take a moment, because there's a moment in Jesus' life where he actually explains his purpose, and he's very, very clear on what his purpose is. And interestingly enough, it happens at the time that we're about to celebrate. Now, here's the problem with this story. If you've spent any time in the church, and especially in Sunday school class, this story has been ruined for you. Because there's a really cute song that helps you remember it, and there's really good hand motions, and probably as I'm preaching it, the song will come to mind, and you will hum it, and you'll go, oh, yay. But yet, you'll miss the point because you've been ruined by a Sunday school song. It's not the Sunday school teacher's fault. It's your fault. But you've been ruined by it. And then there's some of us in this room that we don't have no idea what I'm talking about. And that is good, because now we can all be challenged in the same area of, can we actually apply this principle to our lives? Not just know the information, not just go, yes, 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 I've heard this, but can we actually do what Jesus is challenging us to do? And so I want us to take a look at this verse. It's in Luke 19. Luke 19. You can open up your Bibles or some in the pews in front of you. You can stop chatting on your phone and actually open up the Bible app on your phone. It'll be on the screen. And so, you can turn it there. As you're turning there, I just want to briefly give you background to the book of Luke. The book of Luke was written by a guy named Luke. There you go. Bible's not as confusing sometimes as you think. Written by the guy named Luke. Now, Luke was a doctor. Luke was hired by a guy to go out and find out, were the stories about Jesus, were the miracles, were all the things that were kind of circulating at that time, were they actually true? And it was written to a very non-Jewish, kind of a Gentile culture back then. And so Luke was writing this and giving firsthand accounts and hearing eyewitnesses. They believe that Mary was one of the eyewitnesses and several others, and going, okay, we've heard a lot of these stories. Are they actually true? And so Luke goes out and he writes this whole book of Luke on Jesus' ministry. And then he goes on to write the book of Acts, which is all the ministry that happened after Jesus ascended. And so we have this book of Luke. So Luke 19, we're going to start at verse 1. Luke 19, verse 1. It says, Jesus had entered Jericho and was passing through. And a man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see Jesus, but being a short man, he could not because of the crowd. So here's what's going on, is Jesus is on his way to Jericho. He's on his way to kind of right before the Palm Sunday happened. So he's passing through Jericho. Now, Jericho, if you remember from the Old Testament, it's that famous, walls come tumbling down place. And so Jesus is passing through Jericho. And so the crowd's hearing that Jesus is on his way through. And then you have this character named Zacchaeus. Now, Zacchaeus is the chief tax collector. Some of you know this, but tax collectors now and back then are not popular people. Even more so, they are not popular back then, because what would happen was that the Romans basically would hire Jewish people, and they would say, okay, go collect X amount of taxes from these people, and here's your parameters. And so the Jewish people would go in, they would get their money from them, but then they would charge even more on top of it to make a living, and even more on top of that, just because they could. They would usually have some Roman soldiers next to them, so if the person didn't pay up, there was a quick penalty that could be paid. It's kind of like that scene from the Disney Robin Hood that you see him just kind of constantly collecting money and over again. And so then you have Zacchaeus. But Zacchaeus is the chief tax collector. So he has other people working underneath him. So he's kind of like the top guy in the pyramid scheme. He's the Bernie Madoff of the time going on. And so he's Jewish, and he's hated by his people because he looks like he's a traitor, and he is a traitor. And then the Romans hate him just simply because he's not Roman. And so they look down on him. So here you have this short, rich person that's hated by everybody. And for some reason, every time I read this story, the image of George Costanza pops in my mind, that just everyone hates. There's no reason. I can't explain it, but that's who I imagine. So there's Zacchaeus in the story. Let's keep going. Verse 4. So he ran ahead and climbed up a sycamore tree, because a wee little man was he.
See, it comes up every once in a while. Sycamore fig tree to see him. And since Jesus was coming, see, Zacchaeus, he runs ahead because he's saying, you know what? I've heard these stories about Jesus. I've heard what he's done. I mean, just a few moments before, just before Jesus enters into Jericho, he knows that he healed a blind beggar on the roadside inn. As he's running in, he's going, are these stories about this guy true? I have to at least go see. I mean, the whole crowd came out. There wasn't much to do, so they came out and they were watching him, but Zacchaeus couldn't see, and so he ran. And back then, men did not run. They would have to pull up the skirt-looking thing that they were wearing and run ahead, and so it just wasn't dignified. And then to climb up in a tree. I mean, can you imagine the crowd's reaction? There's this short man that you hate running down the road, and he's about to climb up in a tree. We would all make fun of him, and rightly so, because it would be funny. But the point is there's Zacchaeus. He's getting up in a tree just to take a look at Jesus. Let's keep going. Verse 5. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So at once he came down and welcomed him gladly. See, the interesting part about this that I love is that Jesus went to him. Jesus did not wait for Zacchaeus to kind of get his, you know, stuff in order, to clean himself up, to finally go, you know what, I really do need this guy named Jesus, and I'm going to go find him, and let's go have a conversation, let's get a lunch, and we'll sit down, I'll talk about it, I'll hear about his offer. No, Jesus goes straight to where Zacchaeus was. He went to that spot. So he intentionally was seeking out Zacchaeus, and he didn't wait for him to get cleaned up, but he went to Zacchaeus, and he said, Zacchaeus, I'm coming to your house. He didn't give him much of an option. And Zacchaeus responds by saying, yes, come. And then we're going to look at the interesting response that happens. Verse 7, all the people, now that's a key word right there, all the people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be with the guest of a sinner. But Zacchaeus stood up and said, Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. Now it's interesting to me that this word all is in there, because I was trying to think of who is all. And I actually did a word study on the word all, and after way too much time, I figured out that the word all actually means all. And so it was very pointless. But if you think about all, who is all there? We clearly have the religious leaders that are constantly following Jesus around, waiting for him to trip up. Some of them trying to figure out, is he really who he claims to be? We have the crowd that just comes out because they hear the stories about Jesus, and they hear what's happening, and they're just, hey, at the very least, it'll be a good day of entertainment. And so then we also have Jesus' followers, his disciples. And so all the crowd is there. And Jesus invites Zacchaeus. And he says, Zacchaeus, I'm going to your house today. And Zacchaeus says, yes. And they begin to complain and they begin to mutter, because in that time, if you said that I was going to eat at your house, it meant that you were associating yourself with that person. It meant that you were accepting them and you were saying, you know what? I'm in line with this person. This person's my friend. This is my associate. And so it was a very kind of intimate thing to do. And so people could not believe that Jesus would go be with that guy. And yet Zacchaeus' response is amazing to us, because it says the word gladly, or in the ESV version, it says joyfully. And a lot of scholars believe that that implies that at that moment when he said, Zacchaeus, I want to come to your house today, and he jumps out of the tree gladly, it meant that Zacchaeus right there at that moment had said, you know what? Yes, Jesus. I'm going to say yes. And his eternity was changed at that moment. And then he hears the crowd beginning to mutter and beginning to grumbling and complain, another version says. And Zacchaeus hears it, and he says, and he stands up voluntarily and says, I'm going to give half of my possessions to the poor, and I'm going to give fourfold back to anyone that I've stole from. And I can imagine the crowd going, anyone that you stole from? Can we ask the question, who haven't you stole from? And if it wasn't you personally, it was someone that works for you. And you know what's interesting about this fourfold? And Zacchaeus volunteered to do this on his own. That was the same penalty that back then in the court system, if a thief was found guilty of stealing, that they would have to pay back. And so Zacchaeus, in saying this, he's going, you know what? Everything you think of me, all the thoughts that you have about me, Everything that you feel about me is absolutely correct. And the reason why you hate me as a traitor, I deserve. But my life has been internally changed, and I'm going to prove it to you externally. And Zacchaeus' response when he meets Jesus is life change, and his eternity is changed forever. But how does the all reply? Look back at verse 7. It says, all the people saw this and began to mutter, or another version, grumble and complain. He has gone to be the guest of a sinner, as if they were not a sinner. You know, it's interesting to me that if the all is truly the all, it's the religious leaders. Okay, I can get, they don't really trust Jesus. They don't get him. And if the all is the crowd and they're just kind of living the life how they wanted to live, whether it was a great life or not a great life, I can get why maybe they would complain. How can Jesus, this guy that we all heard about, go and be with that guy? I mean, we all hate that guy. But the followers of Jesus, the ones that said, I follow him, that they left everything to follow him, for them to complain is really interesting to me. I mean, we're talking about James and John and Peter. And if Matthew was involved in this, I mean, Matthew to be upset that Jesus would go to a tax collector and say, come with me, let's associate together, it just happened. That's how Matthew ended up a part of this gang, is that Jesus came to him in a tax booth and said, follow me, and Matthew gets up and leaves, and then there's a party thrown at Matthew's house where all of his sinner friends come together, and Jesus is there, and the exact same words are uttered by the religious people back then. And yet, if the all is really all, that possibly means that Matthew was a part of that. And the scary part is that's just normal human nature. It oftentimes happens in the church that we walk out of the way of life that we were in when we found Jesus and amazing things happen. And then for some reason, we kind of slowly become callous and then we look back and we go, oh, that person. And that person, I'm glad Jesus loves them because I sure don't. And we just kind of look at them and we complain and we mutter and we go, how can that person show up at church? How can someone even ever think about inviting that person? And the reason why we get frustrated over this is because we miss the point. You see, the religious leaders back then, they missed the why. The people who are just in the crowd and just living however they want to live, they miss the why. And Jesus hears this statement going on, and he stands up and says, today, salvation, or today, Yeshua, or today, Jesus has come to this house. And then he kind of adds something in there that had to poke and prod at them, because he says, the son of Abraham. That this man is now a son of Abraham. The man that is a traitor to you. The man who turned a back on you. The man who said he wanted nothing to do with you and did his allegiance to the Romans. He is now part of the community again because he is a son of Abraham. The true Jewish community. And yet Jesus hears them complaining. And he says, fine, here's the reason why I came. And now I want you to listen to this verse because I know some of you have memorized it. But I want you to listen to it one more time. Verse 10. For the Son of Man came to seek and save what was lost. Right there in that verse is the entire gospel. It's the entire gospel of Luke. It's the entire purpose of the entire Bible. That the Son of Man, Jesus, he came. That the Son of Man, Jesus, came in the whole Christmas story to seek, that he lived his ministry, that he was looking for people, and to save that which was lost. Now, oftentimes, for some reason, every time I think of this verse, I always see, you know, save who was lost. And a who is involved in this, but it's much bigger than that. It's what was lost. That when sin entered this world because of Adam and Eve's rebellion, that Jesus came back to redeem all of society, all of humanity, all of culture. And so when we see this verse, we clearly know that Jesus is on a rescue mission. That he didn't just come back just to set up new rules. And he didn't just come back to condemn those people who are living a certain way. But he came back to seek and save which was lost. That all of us. And he came on a rescue mission. And he came back to reunite us with the Father. To bring us home. To bring us to the place that we were supposed to be. To answer those questions that we have in our head. And those moments before our head hits the pillow. And those deep echoes of our life. And those longings that we have. And that he's on a rescue mission to give us peace and to give us comfort and to reunite us back with the Father. And for a lot of us in this room, we call ourselves followers of Christ, but we oftentimes get very frustrated because we miss out on this why. And we don't understand that to follow him means that he came to reunite us and to reunite them. That he didn't come back just for you. He did just come back just for you, but he also came back for them. And the them are the people that don't yet know him. And so your coworkers, the coach of your kid's team, your sibling, your mother, your father, your grandparents. He came back to reunite you and to reunite them. Now, last July, I was kind of sitting in bed, and I think it was the 4th of July, and I couldn't go to sleep because apparently Livermore has no rules on fireworks at that point, and the whole town was blowing up. And so I couldn't sleep, and I was running out watching my neighbors light them because it was enjoyable. But I came to bed, and as I was laying in bed, this video came on. And I'm not a super, like, emotional person when it comes to videos. I'm not a super emotional person as it is anyways. I've cried at 2 movies in my life. Ernest Goes to Camp and Saving Private Ryan, okay? They treated Ernest very poorly in that movie, okay? Point is that I'm not a very emotional person. However, when you watch this video, I want you to think of that big idea. That to follow him means that he came to reunite us and them. And as you watch this video, it'll probably grab at your heart. And if it doesn't, it might mean that you might not have a heart. But take a watch of this video. I've seen that video too many times, and every stupid time I cry. To follow him means that we need to reunite with him, and we need to reunite others with him. You see, Zacchaeus went up in a tree so that he could see Jesus, and Jesus calls him down in that tree, from that tree, because he wants to be reunited with him. And interestingly enough, a few days later after this incident with Zacchaeus, Jesus would go up in his own tree. And Jesus would go up in his own tree so that we could be reunited with him. That he would pay his penalty that we deserve. That he would substitute us for himself. So that we could be reunited with the Father. And there's 2 different angles that you can take at this. One, if you've never said yes to Jesus, can I encourage you? Can I plead with you to run back to him? I know things happened. I know it wasn't right, it wasn't fair, and you don't completely understand it, but could you go back and be with him? And all you have to do is simply say, hey, I admit, you know, Jesus, I admit I've walked away from you. I am a sinner and I've rebelled against you. But Jesus, I believe who you are, and I believe that you paid the penalty for me. And then see, Jesus, can I just commit to following you? Can I make you the leader of my life? And that's simply just reuniting with him. But the other angle of this is this, that if we are not only supposed to reunite with him, but reunite others with him, can you imagine the people who had a chance to organize that? Organize those scenes on the football field, at the school, the feelings and the thoughts and the joy that they got to reunite a son with a mom, a dad with a daughter, and they got to come home and be with them. See, for those of us in the room, when you follow him, your job's not done when you reunite with him. Your job is to take that joy that when you hop out of the tree and you meet him, that joy, and reunite others with him. And you get frustrated oftentimes in your Christian life, and you don't like the music, you don't like the speaking, you don't like the lights, you don't like this and that. And the truth is that you're not lining yourself up with Jesus' mission, because Jesus came to seek and save that which was lost. And are you passionate about what Jesus is passionate about? Do you look at others with the eyes of, if I just had a chance to cause a reunion like that, but on a much grander scale? If I just had the chance to simply invite someone so that they could reunite, imagine what you'd be willing to do to make that happen, for lives and eternities to be changed forever. Are you giving people a chance to even reunite and come home and be where they're supposed to be and where they belong? And so my challenge to you is this. The greatest time ever to invite someone to church is next Sunday. And I don't do it because of some religious guilt. Don't do it because, yay, attendance will be big. Don't do it because of delicious pancakes and sausages. Do it because you're a follower of him and you want to line yourself up with Jesus' mission. But my challenge for you is to take this postcard that you received and then write someone's name on the back of it before you leave here today. A coach, a teacher, a neighbor, a father, a son, a daughter. And they may not deserve it. You may have tried a million times, but can you try a million and one? And can you simply just invite them? Take a picture of it and text message it to them. But before you leave today, would you be willing to say, you know what? Jesus didn't come just to reunite me, but he also came to reunite them with him. I mean, imagine the impact that would happen. Imagine the life change. Imagine the eternities that would change forever just because you lined yourself up with Jesus' mission and you realized that as a follower of Christ, as a follower of Jesus, as someone that surrendered your life to Jesus, that your job is to line up yourself with his true mission, which is to reunite us and them. Let's pray. Jesus, I thank you that you came. You came and you seeked and you saved that which was lost, which is every one of us in this room. And I pray that we would just take this moment to be challenged to the core, to pause, and that you'd bring someone's face to mine. And we would just have the guts, even if they said no, we'd try one more time, because we want to be a part of creating that reunion. We pray this in your name. Amen.